This copyrighted audio file from the writings of David S. Lample is offered free of charge to the glory of God the Father and the praise of Jesus Christ our Lord. Detailed copyright and resource information is included at the end of this file.
First Things, a study of Genesis 1 to 11. Session 33, Two Brothers, Two Offerings. Genesis 4, verses 1 to 5. This session first published June 30, 2024. Chapter 1 of Genesis records the basic sequences in bullet point form of the creation. The universe as a whole, earth, vegetation, the earth's sun and moon, living creatures in the water and in the air, living creatures on the land, then the first man and woman, all in that order. Chapter 2 adds more detail to the creation process, especially regarding humankind, laying the foundation for the tragic third chapter. Chapter 3 records the terrible downfall of man and the introduction of sin into the world, initiated by Satan through his servant, the serpent, resulting in Yahweh God's stern judgment upon all three parties, and even the earth itself. The chapter closes with the first man and woman, Adam and Eve, summarily ejected from paradise, consigned to work the more challenging, less fertile and weed-infested land outside the garden. We now come to chapter 4, which serves, with the introduction of the supposed first children, as a portal into the subsequent generations itemized in chapter 5. Let's read the extended passage here. Let's read chapter 4, verses 1 to 8. Now the man knew his wife, Eve, and she conceived, and gave birth to Cain, and she said, I have gotten a man with the help of Yahweh. And again she gave birth to his brother Abel. Abel was a keeper of flocks, but Cain was a cultivator of the ground. So it happened in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to Yahweh of the fruit of the ground. Abel, on his part, also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And Yahweh had regard for Abel and for his offering. But for Cain and for his offering, he had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. Then Yahweh said to Cain, Why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is lying at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. Then Cain spoke to Abel his brother, and it happened when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. As we have experienced before in this study, a cursory reading of this passage seemingly leaves us with more questions than answers. For example, does verse 1 document the first time Adam and Eve had sexual relations? Just the first time their relations bore fruit? Or were there other children before Cain? What was happening between these two births and when the two, we might guess, fairly young men were old enough to tend the flocks and the fields? What knowledge or commands about offerings to Yahweh were understood by them? And how did they receive them? Why is there no mention in the account, even going all the way back to Genesis 1:1, of Yahweh explaining his preference for blood sacrifice? Or is that what is going on here? What was it about Cain's offering that made it unacceptable to Yahweh? And did Cain knowingly make an inferior offering? Did Abel knowingly make a proper offering? Or were they just offering from their respective materials at hand? That is, did Cain know better? We look forward to discovering answers to at least some of these questions as we proceed. And as we move forward, we are reminded once again of the standard, confusing, even for us, frustrating dichotomy. On the one hand, these events, an illicit offering, deceit, murder, another banishment, they do not represent Yahweh God's ideal for the earth and its people. It is not how he would have it. On the other hand, however, we believe the eternal Godhead had mapped all this out, including the need for a Savior, a Redeemer, to atone for these sins, from well before creation was even initiated. So let's look at verse 1. Now the man knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain, and she said, I have gotten a man with the help of Yahweh. Let us not pass too quickly over the familiar and perhaps archaic euphemism, knew, a reference to the man having conjugal relations with his wife. If one burrows down into that word, not etymologically, but just thinking about the word, knew, one finds that it is utterly appropriate, as well as more polite. It speaks of that supernatural union, the oneness, one flesh, of God's ideal for man and woman in marriage. Genesis 2:24. In that oneness, man and woman know their mate with a depth and intimate understanding that can be attained no other way. But, of course, here it speaks as well of the physical act necessary to produce offspring. In this case, the first male child. As with the possible eating of the fruit from the tree of life, one can only conclude from the way this is phrased that either this was the first time the couple had had relations, or prior to this there had been no issue from the act. And she said, I have gotten a man with the help of Yahweh. There is indeed a loose connection between the name Cain, C-A-I-N, the Hebrew Kain, Q-A-Y-N, and the verb translated I have gotten, which is the Hebrew kana. We won't dwell on that etymology, as it can be rather confusing and ultimately less important than what Eve says about it and what she means. The interpretation of the Hebrew phrase, rendered in the LSB, with the help of Yahweh, or in the King James versions, from the Lord, is accepted by all our common versions. That is, Eve is declaring openly that Yahweh has graciously been a part of this first birth, not an inconsequential credit, since it wasn't that long ago that Yahweh had kicked them out of paradise to fend for themselves in the wild. Apparently, she's not holding a grudge. She even puts it in the terminology of a gift, of having acquired something from someone else, that is, the Lord. The Hebrew text in this portion of the verse is challenging, leading a few scholars to translate it something like, I have the man, comma, the Lord, as did Luther. Or, I have created a man equally with the Lord, That is, a boast that just as the Lord had created a man, so now she had created a man. That from Salehammer. Which could mean either she is equal to the Lord as a creator, or that the child himself is divine. Now, to be fair to Eve, one can imagine that she might in ignorance draw a similarity between God's fashioning of man and her body doing the same, especially if there had been only nominal communication on this from Yahweh God to the man and woman. And remember what we know Yahweh did say to the serpent, presumably in the hearing of Eve. We find that in Genesis 3:15. Yahweh said, "And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel." Well, here is her seed, her first seed. It would seem a natural conclusion drawn by her that this firstborn was the prophesied seed that would have victory over the serpent, and perhaps in that, even divine. We don't know because we don't know what hasn't been told us. We don't know what communication transpired between the man and woman and Yahweh. That being said, one can readily see how the vast majority of translators went with the more pious and reverential translation common to our versions. Now verse 2. "And again she gave birth to his brother Abel. Abel was a keeper of flocks, but Cain was a cultivator of the ground." In this verse we see a dramatic compression of time. How long was it between the two births? We're not told. Some even say they were twins. I don't subscribe to that. And Moses deems it unnecessary to offer even a glimpse of the upbringing of the two lads. They are born, and immediately they're out conducting their respective workaday occupations, either as adults or at least older youth. Both are farmers, like their dad. Cain tends the crops, while his younger brother tends the beasts. David Guzik writes, "We see agriculture and the domestication of animals were practiced among the earliest humans. Adam and his descendants did not spend tens of thousands of years living as hunter-gatherer cave dwellers." That's Guzik. A number of different conclusions have been drawn over the meaning of Abel's name, which is the Hebrew Hebel, which means vapor, breath, even vanity, emptiness, futility. All these conclusions focus on what may have been in the mind of Eve, a resource which, frankly, remains closed to us. Neither can we conclude, as some do, that Eve herself named the child. We're told nothing about the source of the names of either child. We assume the parents did, but whether it was Adam or Eve or both together, we don't know. Now verses 3 to 5. "So it happened in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to Yahweh of the fruit of the ground. Abel, on his part, also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And Yahweh had regard for Abel and for his offering. But for Cain and for his offering, he had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell." Moses makes one more leap in time in verse 3. "So it happened in the course of time." The King James versions have it, "in the process of time." The phrase means, as Young's literal translation has it, at the end of days. And that implies sometime later. The implication from this is that this represents a considerable span of time. And there's no reason to think this was the first such offering. Neither need we assume this was performed after a dictate laid down by Yahweh. Leupold, for one, makes a solid case, as does history itself, for such sacrifices rising out of an inherent impulse in human nature. And I'm reminded of something that occurred in my own life many years ago. Having written a musical that had enjoyed a successful run, one day, sitting at my desk, it occurred to me, in a fit of joy and thanksgiving to God for that musical, and looking for a way to acknowledge to Him that I know it came from Him, not from me. It occurred to me to take a copy of the script out onto the patio and offer it as a burnt sacrifice of devotion to God. Now, whether this is proper or not for a Christian, that we'll leave that aside. It was simply an unselfish thought. How can I express my thanksgiving to God? And that occurred to me. Our text says, Cain brought an offering to Yahweh of the fruit of the ground. Abel, on his part, also brought the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. Turn, please, to Hebrews 11, verse 4. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he was approved as being righteous, God approving his gifts. And through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. Now, we will return to that sometime later, but let's return now to our text. If you are like me, you have grown up with the idea that Abel's sacrifice was more acceptable to Yahweh because it was a fleshly sacrifice, termed a bloody sacrifice, whereas Cain's was not accepted because it was not a blood sacrifice. But that idea is not correct. First, if we compare these to the Mosaic Law, both of these would have a resemblance closest to the Feast of Weeks or the Feast of Ingathering or Booths, when the harvest was celebrated and the very first and best of the harvest was offered to God in thanksgiving and praise for another bountiful harvest. Turn, please, to Exodus 34. Exodus chapter 34. Let's begin reading at verse 21. You shall work 6 days, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Even during plowing time and harvest you shall rest. And you shall celebrate the Feast of Weeks, that is, the first fruits of the wheat harvest, and the Feast of Ingathering at the turn of the year. Now skip down to the first portion of verse 26. You shall bring the very first of the first fruits of your ground into the house of Yahweh your God. In our text, these are called offerings, not sacrifices. Although, in a broad, general sense, the word sacrifice used in the Hebrews passage, the Greek thusia, can include non-bloody offerings. But of course, these covenantal feasts were only in the mind of the chronicler, not the characters in Genesis. Both brothers were simply conducting a simple traditional ceremony, giving thanks to Yahweh for their food, each offering from the fruits of their respective areas of labor. As the Mosaic Law reveals, there is nothing substandard about offering produce when the practice has nothing to do with atonement, that is, to expiate sin, or salvation, such as Passover or the Day of Atonement, where the shedding of blood is explicitly called for. The Hebrew word here translated offering is menhah, which covers any type of gift man may bring. Leupold writes, neither of the two sacrifices is made specifically for sin. Nothing in the account points in this direction. Consequently, the merit of the one over against the other does not lie in the fact that it was a bloody offering. The nature of the sacrifice as to its material is determined entirely by the occupation of him who brings it. Leupold continues, in fact, throughout the narrative, one should carefully guard against imputing to these sacrifices things that we cannot prove to have been part of them. We are not even sure that an altar was built for the purpose. The first altar is mentioned after the flood. We cannot prove that fire was employed to consume the sacrifice. That the animal sacrifice was killed is made apparent by the use of the term fat pieces. That's Leupold. That reference to fat portions may offer us one clue as to why Yahweh had regard for Abel's offering. Leviticus 3, verses 16 to 17 reads, and the priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar as food, an offering by fire for a soothing aroma. All fat is Yahweh's. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your places of habitation. You shall not eat any fat or any blood. It's Leviticus 3, 16 to 17. Moses tells us specifically that Abel included the beast's fat portions. And we take that to be an expression on Abel's part of obedience and devotion to Yahweh. Again, it's Moses who's familiar with the Mosaic Law, not Abel. There was something fundamental about this, something ingrained, something that came naturally. But Hebrews 11, verse 4, gives us probably the finest clue for why God favored Abel's offering. It reads, by faith Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he was approved as being righteous. By faith, it was the condition of Abel's heart that made the difference, not the composition of the offering. It was his faith in Yahweh that warranted not just Yahweh's acceptance of his offering, but a declaration that he was declared by God to be righteous. Note one more comparison. Look at verse 4. Abel brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. That is, Abel made a righteous offering by giving to God the first and the best of what he had to offer. We are not to give our God from that which is left over, but right off the top. As for Cain, verse 3, Cain brought an offering to Yahweh of the fruit of the ground. Absent any descriptive terms, such as the text includes for Abel's offering, we're left to conclude that Cain's offering was simply pro forma, just going through the motions because it was, well, that time of the year when one did such things. And as such, because of the apparent coldness of Cain's heart, Yahweh had no regard for his offering. Was he contrite? Repentant? No. Cain burned with anger, Yahara. He burned with anger toward God and the desire for vengeance against his brother, as we see in verse 8.
Thank you for using our Bible study resources. This has been the audio version of our weekly printed session notes. It is copyright 2024 by David S. Lample, but is offered free of charge and may be freely shared with others. All printed and audio notes are available in the Bible study section of our website at dlample.com. This website also includes our monthly devotional, Reflections by the Pond, as well as archives of our devotional publications from the last 34 years. You will also find at dlample.com all of our His Company Christian drama resources. Unless otherwise indicated, scripture in this audio file is from the Legacy Standard Bible, copyright the Lachman Foundation. Greek and Hebrew citations and definitions are from Strong's Greek and Hebrew Dictionary and the NASB Greek Hebrew Dictionary. All resources are offered free of charge in acknowledgement of the Lordship of Jesus Christ. For more information about who we are, please visit the About Us page at our website.